It's Tech for Tykes Week on the Wells Tech Podcast. We're so happy to have Jason Schmidt joining us, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. And we'll hear from Becky Huebner, preschool director from Palm Coast, Florida. All that and more coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, as usual, with the Wells Tech Podcast, a place where we talk about technology and its impact on our ministries. This is Classroom Technology Week, and of course, joining me as usual from Sleepy Eye, back from Mississippi, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin Spriggs. How are you today?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to also have joining us this morning from Omaha, Nebraska, Jason Schmidt. Good morning,
Hi.
Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, Martin.
Yeah, once a month, those of you that are longtime listeners recognize that we have a classroom technology focus, and I'm kind of interested in, and I know nothing about the topic for the day, which isn't all that unusual, I guess, but this one in particular, Tech for Tykes, we're going to call it, and we've got a great interview with Becky Huebner down in Palm Coast, Florida. Who runs a preschool down there. But one reason that we were eager to have Jason on this week is they're involved, your school district down there is involved with some initiatives to provide some technology for the little guys and gals. And that's really going to be our focus. We talk about adult learning, and we talk about elementary and high school tools and topics, because that's what we're most familiar with. But technology is not limited then. In fact, there's probably a nice sweet spot for technology for the Tykes.
Yeah, I think in our school setting in particular here in Sleepy Eye, we start with technology with our preschoolers and we go from there. We don't have any particular mobile devices in use here in Sleepy Eye, but we do have a computer lab and also computers in the classroom. So I think we're kind of in a shift, and we'll hear from Becky later about using iPads in the classroom, but then we also have many classrooms that are using the traditional computer lab setups as well. I'm guessing you probably have both going on in your school district, Jason?
Yeah, actually, you know, for being as big as we are, you know, compared to like a Wells school, we're still kind of in the same place that you guys are. You know, we're kind of dipping our toes into the whole mobile device thing and see how that works. And, you know, we've got classroom computers, we've got computer labs, kids have computers at home. We try to make as much use of that kind of thing as we can. And it's just, you know, it's still, you know, little kids have been around forever, but it's still kind of a
that's pretty profound.
I do what I can. But it's still kind of, we're still kind of getting into some new territory, you know, especially with some of the advances in technology that we've had in the past, you know, 5 years or so.
Sure.
Yeah.
We really have made it a whole lot more accessible for a two-year-old to be able to get onto the internet and do stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think about when my kids were little, and they aren't that old, we had stacks of really cool CDs, and all the cool games were on CD. And I know over at our school, we have dusty shelves with lots of CD-based programs. And just within the last 5 years or so, pretty much all the educational gaming has gone online. So those CD-based programs are way out of date now. You just don't load the Oregon Trail on CD anymore. But now you play it online or whatever. And so now here is yet another shift to the mobile devices. And as we were preparing for this show, we were struggling because, wow, that's a really cool website, but does it work on an iPad? Is it Flash-based? That kind of thing really becomes a challenge. And so we have a list of great websites for the early childhood initiatives, but we also know that there are many on the iPad as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting conversation in and of itself, because the way you interact with a computer is so much different maybe than it was when computers first started, you know, when we were character-based and then we introduced the mouse and we wondered if kids would be able to pick that up, and they certainly did, so they understood the input device. And we had tablets, and now we have, you know, things like the iPad, which is all touch. There really is no other input device other than your finger. And I suppose that plays right into our Tech for Tykes conversation, because that's as simple as it gets.
You bet. I think that the kids are a lot ahead of the curve on a lot of us in that regard. You know, they get it when it comes to especially the touchscreen interaction. I have some cute pictures of kids looking at my iPad for the first time, and I flip the camera around on them, and their mouth is just wide open, you know, and they scroll through things just at lightning speed. So I think we've probably all seen the videos, the viral type videos on YouTube where the babies are turning the pages on the iPad and that kind of thing. So definitely the future there, but I think it speaks to the challenges of non-readers by being very visual.
Right.
And even if we're using websites to communicate with the kids, we need to have a lot of graphics going on. It needs to be visually navigable. Is that your term there, Jason?
I'm stealing from you. I think I coined that one. That's all right. I'll hand that one over to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the hugest, and honestly, up to this point, has been one of the biggest barriers, I think, for getting that age of kids involved with technology, is just the fact that a lot of times you just need to be able to read, and they aren't able to, and then you pair that with just the idea that they, you know, I would try to do things with my little ones on the computer, and I'd have fingerprints all over the place because they don't get that coordination of move your finger on the mouse or move the pad and, you know, mm-hmm. click on this button and that kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, but that touch interface is just such a big deal, and so compelling for those little guys to make it accessible for them.
So in your school district, what's the plan for implementing technology at that grade level?
Well, for now, they're going to be getting more iPads at the primary grades. Mm-hmm. You know, there's really no other way around that. We have a couple of teachers that are going to be piloting using some of the I forget what they're called. They're Leapfrog makes them. LeapPad. That's
right,
what it is.
Right.
And those are the nice thing about those is they have that same touch interface, but they are only $99 a piece. So and then, you know, the software obviously for them is a little bit more expensive. But for those non-readers, that's a really great option for them. So we'll be piloting some of that.
So explain to our listeners what the difference is, let's say, between a LeapPad and an iPad.
Well, a LeapPad is a little bit smaller than an iPad, and it doesn't do nearly as much. It has software that you purchase it from LeapPad, and it's mostly books, mostly interactive books. So if you remember, if you've ever seen like the old Leap pads with the stylus and the book, and you put the book in the cartridge in the tablet,
right,
kind of a thing, you know, and you turn the page and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of an updated version of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they have the screen on it, and it's a touch screen. There isn't a stylus or anything like that. And it doesn't access the internet or anything. It just loads the software that you put on there, basically.
Okay, so it's kind of a closed system. Although the iPad, you know, some would consider closed too, but there's always new apps coming out for the iPad. And then, you know, this next section we're going to talk about websites. Obviously, the sky's the limit. There's all kinds of people out there creating educational resources, and it's almost hard to keep up and find what you're looking for because there's so much out there.
Yeah, and I actually I have been leading trainings with our teachers because most of our teachers in the district got iPads this past, you know, like a month and a half, 2 months ago. So part of the training has been, you know, how do you find apps? How do you use apps? and where, you know, how do you sift through and get the good ones, kind mm-hmm. of a thing. So that's been a lot of training and sure. kind of difficult for people to think about.
Right.
Yeah, you got to step outside your comfort zone.
Yeah, with the new iPad 3, there was also some news that would be interesting to anybody rolling out iPads in schools, and that's the there's a configurator now that allows you to manage iPads a little bit better. Are you familiar with that, Jason?
Yeah, I've used that a little bit. It only runs on Lion, so you need to have a new Mac or at least
sure.
an updated Mac. But, you know, same thing with iBooks Author, I guess, is the same thing. But what this tool basically does is it allows you to lock down an iPad. So if you're familiar at all with the iPhone configuration tool, is what they used to have, that would allow you to do things like, you know, remove the App Store and remove some of those, you know, like FaceTime and the Game Center, all of those other apps that you didn't necessarily want kids to have access to, you could take those away. With the configurator, you can do that. But in addition to that, you can also load in codes from for purchased apps mm-hmm. and have like a master image of these apps that want on this iPad. So it makes it a whole lot easier to set up. You know, I think their tested limit is 30 at a time. But I have wow. I talked to an Apple rep and they said that it will do 60, but not always reliably.
Okay.
But you know,
certainly can do a classroom at a time if everybody has one. Sure.
And that was kind of the goal. The mm-hmm. idea for all of these was, you know, if a teacher has a classroom set and the teacher has a Mac and they have a charge sync cart, then they could just plug their laptop into the cart, sync them all, and be done with it. So mm-hmm. that part of it has been
that makes a big difference for anybody managing that. It's huge.
Oh man, it is so much nicer, mm-hmm. and not to have to set up all the dummy iTunes accounts and
right.
you know, redeem the codes and put all that stuff in there. This is a whole lot easier.
Okay, good. Well, we've talked a little bit about iPads, but there's a whole other category of content, and some could be used on the iPad, some not. And and Sally mentioned that we've got a little list here. Any that you want to highlight, you guys?
For early readers, I think starfall.com is an excellent website. It's all phonics-based, and it has a lot of interactivity, and it has four different levels. So it starts with pre-K level, just teaching them the alphabet and having, you know, a lot of audio to go along with it, so that they can hear the different letter sounds and in different settings and things like that. So mm-hmm. starfall.com I know is one that we use real heavily at St. John's.
Okay.
Another reading one is Between the Lions, which is part of the PBS Kids family, but that specific television show Between the Lions, they just have excellent reading games, and so I can always get my kids on that website and be confident that they're learning along with the fun that they're having there.
Okay. Jason, any strike you?
We in our district use an open source painting program called TuxPaint. And it's really neat, really intuitive. And the really cool thing about it is you can customize kind of the different stamps that you put in there. So, you know, we have our Bennington Badger, which kind of looks a lot like the Wisconsin Badger,
mm-hmm.
But he's blue and he has a bee on his chest, so it's different. but we have him as a stamp. You know, we have all these other different kinds of neat little images that we put in there as stamps, and you know, the kids really enjoy that, and they that's one of those really neat ways for them to kind of easily you know, show their creativity, and also an opportunity to work on those finer motor skills, moving and manipulating the mouse and click and drag and that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that's been a really neat tool for us.
Cool.
And we have many others, so check out the list in the show notes of recommended websites for the early crowd.
Yep.
Early childhood crowd.
And Jason mentioned one tool that we should probably talk a little bit more about, because I think increasingly a number of people are desirous of creating their own content. And now there are tools, especially for the iPad, but certainly for the web too, but on the iPad, a while back, Apple introduced the iBooks Author, which I play a little bit around with, but makes it very simple to create basically an iPad book, or an iBook, they call it, that includes multimedia, can include surveys and polls, audio clips, obviously text, images, rotating screen grabs. All those kinds of things can be made, and all with a touch interface. And I'm in the process of converting, you know, an ebook that I created a while back on Websites and Missions, and I probably spent a couple hours on it and got probably 10-15 pages done in just by cut and paste and adding a little multimedia and those kinds of things. And I would envision those ambitious teachers who have content that they want to present to their kids on any level that have iPads in their hands, this would be a great tool, and it's free and it's easy to use. There's not a huge learning curve.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the iBooks Author, but I do know that in our interview with Becky Huebner, she talks about the little kids enjoying books in that kind of setting. And so it's one of the major applications for an iPad in the classroom, for
right.
sure.
Right. Jason, any thoughts before we...
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as the iBooks Author goes, you know, there are a lot of really compelling things that you can do with that. And if you combine the iBooks Author with, let's say, one of the features that's built into the iPad is the voiceover. You know, that'll read the text to whoever it is that's
sure.
holding the iPad. You know, obviously for the little guys, you don't want to do anything that's too too word centric. But you know, you can very easily create a picture book or something like that, and you know, or have the kids help make a book about their day, and you know, you can record them with a little video camera and embed that video in there and take pictures. And you know, I could see a lot of really neat uses on the creativity end of things.
Right, as a project.
Using it with the kids. Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. We're going to hear about a couple other things in our interview today. Becky Huebner, who's a preschool director down at Christ the King in Palm Coast, Florida, was good enough to come on the show and talk about her experiences. They are using iPads in the classroom for the tykes there. So let's listen to our conversation with Becky. We're very happy to have Becky Huebner with us this morning from Christ the King in Palm Coast, Florida. She's the preschool director at the preschool there. Welcome, Becky.
Hello. Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm sure you have many things to do, and we're really appreciative that you took 15 minutes of your time to spend it with us. Maybe you could start by introducing yourself, your congregation, your current call, family, hobbies, those kinds of things. Anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure. Well, my name is Becky Huebner, and I am the preschool director at Christ the King here in Palm Coast, Florida. My husband, Phil Huebner, is the pastor, and we've been down here since July of 2007 when he was assigned to start a church. A year later, we, as a congregation, decided that preschool would be something that this area needs, this city needs, and I am lucky enough to be the one that gets to do all of that. So I am in charge of the preschool, but then I also do stuff with the elementary school and help them out. We have one-year-olds all the way up to fifth grade, next year expanding to eighth grade. I mentioned my husband, and we also have two kids. Noah is 5, and our daughter Gwen will be 2 next month.
So you have kids in the preschool.
Yes. Uh-huh. Kind of nice to have everybody on campus with us.
Well, we're really excited to hear about your preschool and early childhood program that you have going there. How big is your program, Becky?
From preschool down in our VPK program, the state of Florida has a voluntary pre-kindergarten where kids get to go to school for free for 3.5 hours a day, and then the state pays us to have the program. And we have 71 kids just in our 4- and 5-year-old preschool program. We have 27 in our 3-year-old program. In our tweeners class, we have 25. And in our toddler room, we have 23. So there's we have a great, great crew of kids. It's a whole lot of fun.
And that's all in a very short period of time.
Yeah, since 2000, we started, our first school year was the 2008-2009 school year. Well,
Lord,
this
has,
is our fourth year.
Lord has certainly blessed your work there. That's wonderful. Yeah. So one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you was about your use of technology, especially in the early childhood area of Christ the King. That's kind of the focus of our show. Maybe let's start with iPads. That's kind of big in the news right now, and so that's kind of top of mind. And I understand that you have are using iPads in your school. Are you using it in the preschool area as well?
Yeah, we have the capability to do all kinds of things with those iPads at the preschool level, especially speaking in terms of that VPK program, that 4- and 5-year-old. They have iBooks, and it's a really neat thing. You can either have the kids read it, or you can press read to me, and you just hold it, and the book reads itself, and it highlights the words as it goes along. So they're being read to when they're sick of hearing my voice. They can have somebody else reading to them, and the pictures go right along with it. And it turns the pages. It's just a really, there's so many apps for books right now that it's really, really cool to be able to use that. Some of the other things that are on there, some of the different applications that we have are tracing letters and numbers, where it will show them just exactly how to trace in the proper way. You know, if you're tracing the letter A, start at the top, slant down, start at the top again, slant down, and then also connect them by going across. And they have to almost connect the dots, and it's like the old Pac-Man game almost that we're used to. And there's a crab that eats shells to go in the right direction. Then it has words associated with it also. Some of the other ones I like are, there's some beginning sound games, because that really in early childhood is what they need to know to have reading success also. So there's a couple of them where they have to match the beginning sounds, and they really like to use those, because then they can hear, you know, ah, ah, and they have to match those letters. So there's just a plethora of things that they can do on these iPads, and they're better at it than I am half the time. They're really, really good.
Well, that was my question. Yeah, was there a training period? Did you have to instruct them how to use the device, or did it come pretty naturally?
It seemed to come pretty naturally to them, especially with our son, Noah. He loves to use it because he's in the, you know, being in the preschool program also. It seems as though you sit down and you have a small group first, and use small group, 2 or 3 kids, show them how to do it. And then it almost becomes an unguided center, because they understand it and grasp the concept so quickly that they are able to work in pairs and do it pretty unguided. Obviously, they're supervising to make sure that this expensive item is used the right way, but they grasp the concept pretty quickly.
So do you have one per child, or do they share them, or how does that work?
Oh, we wish we could have one per child. We don't. We have one per classroom. Well, actually, in our VPK, my classroom and then our assistant director classroom are next to each other. We have a door that connects us, and so there's one for that classroom. Our tweeners classroom has one that they have, and our toddlers classroom has one that they have. And then first and second grade have computer labs, and third through fifth have computer labs also.
Cool. I'm curious about the kids' reaction to it. Are they more drawn to the technology than the traditional forms of play that you're including in your preschool program? And then have you had any success stories where there are kids that were really struggling, where this was a breakthrough for them?
They are incredibly excited about it. So sometimes we have to, especially this time of year right before spring break, it is something that they really get excited about, and they'll and they are certainly drawn to. We try not to use it too. We use it a lot, but at the same time, we try and use it kind of infrequently so that that novelty doesn't wear off. I mean, this generation of kids, they all have DS, they all have a Wii, they all have other gaming systems that they have at their house. They tell me about how good they are at them all the time. So we try and use it in as infrequently as we can, if that makes sense, so that it still becomes something that is exciting for them to use and not just an everyday tool for them because they have so much technology at their house also. So we do a lot of, you know, fun Friday stuff where they get a chance to. Just yesterday, I used the storybook with my kids and read Three Billy Goats Gruff with them. And so they still get really excited about the book aspect. That's something that doesn't seem to wear off on them too much. Some of the success stories, mainly, they all just, I can't think of one child in particular, but they all seem to grasp it because it's something different than putting pen to paper. It's something different. They're using more senses. They're having to focus a little bit more, and it becomes such a game to them also where they're not really realizing how much they're learning. They're just looking at it as they get to use this fun, cool thing that that they don't have at home. So a lot of them, some you'll see different concepts click. Like I had a little guy that really was struggling with the letters of the alphabet, and in, especially the ones in his name. He couldn't quite get it. And then you put it in a different format, and all of a sudden now he picks up a little bit more and can see them, you know, taking them out of context and being able to make an even more fun game out of it really seems to click with them.
Becky, how do you deal with the durability? These are obviously expensive devices. They're made of, you know, electronic components and glass.
Right.
Do you have a way to protect them? And then do you sanitize them in some special way?
We have a rubber case on it, kind of like the OtterBox, but I don't think it's OtterBox. But we have that, and then the rule is they have to stay on their bottoms and use it. If you're not, they know what the rules are, and they know if I see you standing up with it, then you're going to have to go to a different center. You're not going to be allowed to use it. Exactly, you know, talking about the value of things and giving them the opportunity to understand. And since it's used, you know, only once or twice a month, then they kind of seem to understand the value of it a little bit more. But yeah, we have the OtterBox, and then just lying down the, you know, putting the rules and regulations down right away. They're pretty good at following the directions.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you keep them clean?
Normally what I take is a baby wipe on the back, especially the back of it, and wipe it down that way. The front of it, I just get one of our, we have some microfiber cloths that we have, and I'll just wipe it down. If there's some smudges on it, I'll just dampen the microfiber a little bit and wipe that off. But normally just taking the microfiber to it seems to clean everything up.
Sure.
Awesome. Well, I'm really curious to hear also about your childcare program, and it sounds like you're making use of the iPads there for communicating with parents. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's an app called Baby Connect, and every child is logged into it. So they are, it's programmed. You can sign the child in on the laptop, on the iPad, and then you mark what they eat. You mark when they go to sleep. There's a timer on it, actually, where you mark when they, you start the timer when they sleep, you stop the timer when they wake up, so parents know exactly how long they've slept. They also have on there, you know, the child is at circle time or the child is outside playing. And so you get to see just exactly the rundown of every day for them. They mark what foods, hey, Gwen is out of diapers, please bring some more in tomorrow. You can even write notes to the parents and say, you know, Gwen seemed to be a little off today. She didn't really take a long nap. She needed a couple extra hugs today. just wanted to let you know, you know, it's such an easy way to communicate with the parents, and the parents love it. The email goes out every night at the end of the day, and so by the time they get home, they can see just exactly how the child's day has gone. If they need anything else, they can see how many times they needed a diaper change, how many wet diapers, how many dirty diapers. It's
very just, detailed. Huh?
It's very detailed. It's very detailed, and the parents really seem to like it. And it's the easiest program to use. It's just a matter of hitting buttons. You just hit email, select the child, and send. And there's nothing that you have to do special or anything like that. It's just really, really neat. The parents' email addresses are already put in there, so you're not inputting email addresses every day. It's linked with the child, and it's a really cool program.
I would think parents of preschoolers would like more information rather than less. And it sounds like it does exactly that.
Exactly, exactly. Especially, you know, we talk with the parents every day, but it's nice to be able to track. And then there's actually a bar graph at the bottom of it that kind of shows how regular your child is, when their nap times are, when they normally have a diaper, or it just seems to cover the whole spectrum of things that parents want to know. And our daughter Gwen is in there. So as a parent, I love being able to click on my email and see just everything that she's done that day.
Very neat. One last question, Becky, before we let you go. This is primarily in the preschool that we've been talking about. How about in the earlier elementary grades, K to 2, are they using the technology as well? And if so, how are they using it?
Yeah, we actually have a program called Jupiter Grades that you mark. You can mark attendance on. You send instant notifications via text or email. You can log things in on your phone. The teachers can do their grades right there. Each classroom also has their own website by Google Sites, and so parents can go right to the child's website and see, okay, here are the class announcements, here's the memory work that's due, here's homework assignments that are due. We also have Google spreadsheets for all the attendance and everything, and the latest one that we just got was from booksource.com, and then it's a classroom organizer where kids can check in and check out library books through the computer and through our iPhones and iPads.
Wow.
And that's it. Yeah, it catalogs all your books for you, and the kids have an actual working library where they have to check in and check things out.
Very cool. Now, is that an iPad? That's an iPad app?
You can use it through your iPad, and you have to go through the website first, and then you get the classroom organizer on your iPad or your iPhone, because it takes a picture and scans in the barcodes of all the books.
Okay. So you basically, you know, the heavy lifting is on the front end where you're trying to inventory all your books.
Yeah. And then the kids. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you know which books are being checked out at that time, and you can put when they're due back and everything. It's a really cool application.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you're making great use of technology down there in Palm Coast, and I'm sure the kids are enjoying it, and sounds like the parents are as well. So
yeah.
Be interesting to keep up with you as your school expands and you make greater use of technology. But Becky, thank you for sharing that information with us, and blessings on your work down there. That's exciting stuff.
Thank you. It was my pleasure to come on in and share. There's just an endless amount of things that you can do with all this technology. So it's great to be able to teach the kids now how to use it and how much fun learning can be.
Great. Thanks,
Perhaps
Becky.
We'll have to do a Wells Tech field trip at some point and check it out in person.
Certainly.
January sounds good.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, we've been having beautiful 80-degree weather with the glorious sunshine. So anytime, come on down.
It's right. Awesome.
Thanks again, Becky.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our thanks to Becky for taking the time, and interesting stuff. And this is, you can tell from the enthusiasm in her voice that she loves what she does, and that I think the kids are having a great learning experience down in Florida there.
Yeah, I have to thank Becky for the Langyap. I don't know if we've talked about Langyap recently, Martin, but a little something extra. I was really excited to hear about the Baby Connect app. I bet a lot of our preschool directors that are listening will be checking out that app for their iPad, keeping up with all the goings-on in a busy childcare setting. Mm-hmm. Sounds really awesome.
Great. We'll have to follow up with Becky and see how technology continues to be a tool that they use down there. Thanks again, Becky, for your time and blessings on your work. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Jason, you want to do the honors?
Yeah, sure. My pick this week is it's called TES iBoard. It's actually a website that is put together by a group of teachers out of the United Kingdom, out of England. Mm-hmm. So if you go to the website, you see they have a little bit different way of talking about things. But the idea here is that these are supposed to be interactive activities that you use with an interactive whiteboard, or if you have a computer that has a touchscreen screen attached to it, or you know, just have a kid with a mouse and a computer and a mouse, that would do it too. Mm-hmm. But they organize their resources between three different categories. They have reception, year one, and year two. And reception would be like our equivalent of kindergarten. And then year one is obviously first grade, and year two would be second grade. So you've got it listed by different grade levels and different categories. You know, they have numbers, they have literacy or science. The ICT is technology. So they have all of these different categories, and lots of really neat activities, lots of fun things to do, and the price is, of course, very much right.
So are these interactive, or are these just activities as they watch a video?
These, it's a mix of things. Some of them are videos with activities. Some of them are, you know, here are the directions, do this with the, with it, or, they're just things that are completely open-ended and just, you know, see how it works and what are you doing with it. So
gotcha.
Lots of really neat things that can be used here, both for individual activities and for group instruction.
Okay. Very cool. I like it.
Yeah.
Sally, you're
I'm up next, and I'm going to point to the PBS Kids website. I mentioned earlier that Between the Lions, games that are available from PBS Kids, but the entire PBSKids.org website is probably number one in my students' book when we have time to explore on the computer, especially for that preschool age set. And so it covers all the different PBS shows, and there are interactive games for each of the shows. And I just noticed when I visited their website that they also have some mobile apps available on the PBS Kids website. That's one of the drawbacks we were talking about, is that a lot of these flash-based games aren't going to work like on an iPad mm-hmm. or other mobile device. But they have a whole mobile section. It's pbskids.org/mobile. And you can look at all the different apps. You can see which ones are free. You can select your device, either Android phone, iPad, iPhone, or iPod Touch, and see which games work for that. They have math-based games. They have literacy-based games, even a French game. And so you can get some foreign language, French and Spanish, actually. So lots of possibilities there from the PBS mobile apps as well. So they've got something for everyone. And just so you don't feel left out, teachers, they have a whole website dedicated to teachers with resources for the classroom, organized by grade level and subject area, and specific teacher applications for the PBS Kids games and things, where they actually have lesson plans and things to go along with the gaming that's available on the PBS Kids site. So probably more resources than you can even comprehend. So
yeah.
Check it out.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot for mentioning that, the mobile download, Sally, because those are very high quality apps and definitely worth, you know, if you need to pay for it, it's definitely worth the $1.99 or $2.99 that you would pay for them. They're really very well done and fantastic.
Just really encouraging to see all of these educational resources out there and people taking the time to collect them in a make sense way so the teachers can find the stuff rather than doing Google searches and hoping to find something. Just the way these things are organized, both your pick, Jason, and yours, Sally, both resources do a great job at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My pick is not necessarily a classroom technology pick, although there are certainly applications for it, and it's Google Hangouts. We've talked about it on the show in the past, but Google Hangouts, I guess the best way to describe it, most people are familiar with Skype, and Skype has something called video chat. That's really what Google Hangouts is. It's video chat, Google style. And there's a couple differences. One, to do video chat in Skype, you have to pay for a premium account. You don't have to do that with Google Hangouts. It's all over voice over IP, so you need to use your computer's microphone and webcam. I think you can join without a camera and just do the audio, but that takes all the fun away. You can have up to 10 participants, one being yourself and then 9 others. And it has all kinds of integration with different Google products, including Google Docs. So you can do some sharing of Google Docs and work on a document at the same time. You can do some shared notes or note-taking. There's screen sharing, so you can share your desktop. If you're not familiar with Google+, that's really kind of how you have to launch it. You have to get into Google+. And if you have a Google account now, you have a Google+ account. And it's based on circles. Circles are basically collections of people that you put, let's say, in an address book group. So you say, I'm going to put all my Wells Tech people over here and my family over here and friends over here, whatever. And then you just click on a circle and say, I'm going to hang out with this group of people. They'll get an invite. Obviously, they have to be online to receive the invite. They click a link, and they are pushed into the hangout. There's no cost, and there's no time limit. You can hang out as long as you like. The video follows the speaker, too, which is kind of cool. So the computer or the system knows who's talking, and then the focus of the camera is on that speaker. But you can always see all of the participants in a row at the bottom. So there's one, if you have 10 people in the conference, there's going to be one on the big screen, but the 9 others are going to be below it. And you can actually click on one of the whichever video you want to view if you don't want to allow the computer to select the video based on who's talking. Very soon, I think they're going to be launching a feature that would allow for broadcasting, like live streaming, and recording of that through their YouTube service. It's in a limited rollout now. Actually, Wells has an account that we're playing with a little bit, but I think a product and a tool that has a lot of uses. I know a lot of our churches and schools are using Skype. This works in a very similar fashion, and some of the use cases for it would be similar. So that's Google Hangouts.
And Martin, I have a question. What's the largest group you've been in thus far? Have you been in a hangout with 10 participants?
I have not, although I've watched recordings of those that have had 10, and it's been very seamless. It works really well. There's no laggy anything, very real time. I think the algorithms that Google has put together to make this all happen, and then the use of their servers has really made this a usable product. So audio quality's good. So I'm looking forward to other uses for this, both on the Synod level, but also personally. So
cool.
It kind of makes me think of Google Wave on steroids.
Right, yeah. and hopefully this will stay around longer than Google Wave.
Yeah, that one's kind of toast now.
But it seems to be gaining traction. Political candidates are using it. Obama had a hangout not too long ago, and I think Newt Gingrich had a hangout, and Mitt Romney. So it's got some traction there, and I think it's here to stay. It's a good product. I think they've done a nice job.
All right.
Shall we move on to community feedback?
Community feedback. And as it happens, we are featuring some DIGO links that were submitted by the two of you. So you guys get to explain your own community feedback. Martin, you had a couple. Why your church needs mobile apps?
Yeah, this is just a blog post. I'm just pulling it up now from Church. Church Mag is a blog that I subscribe to, and they always have things that are obviously very specific to churches and ministry. And this one is why your church needs mobile apps now, and they give some statistics about why it's important and how many people are using mobile apps and how mobile devices are outselling computers now. And it's a little bit different world when you're trying to create content for a smaller screen. And that's what this talks about, and how churches should be thinking about their web content and not to leave out the large and growing mobile contingent that they need to serve. And it's not just the younger generation. A lot of people, when they are doing their web surfing, are doing it on these handheld devices. So just a nice little blog post with some resources.
He kind of ends the blog post with, it says, "Already we see that large churches have full-time staff devoted to website ministries. It may never be practical to have such positions in smaller churches, but the effective church leader will need to broaden their skills to include such technology." Yep. "Perhaps seminaries will teach courses on website ministries."
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep, and I think they are dealing with that a little bit, but not to any great, great extent. There's all kinds of other things, obviously, that a seminarian needs to know. Mm-hmm. But they certainly need to be aware of these communication channels that are now available that never were not too long ago. So mm-hmm. Good blog post.
We'll alternate. Jason, I see that you had tagged one called "Using Google Docs to Create Digital Kits for Student Projects." What's that all about?
Yeah, I just came across this the other day. I was doing a little bit of research for a project that I have going on here, and I came across this blog post by Bill Ferreter, and it's a neat concept. What it basically is you use Google Docs to put together resources for kids to do like a digital storytelling kit or a research or something like that. So that way you do some of that really time consuming work ahead of time for the kids. So rather than letting them spend 4 or 5 days looking for pictures, you have done that in advance, and then they just have like 4 or 5 or 6 that they pick out of a pool of 50 or something like that, to make that process a whole lot easier. So I thought just a really neat application for Google Docs and using that in the classroom, and kind of using it almost as a classroom management tool.
Awesome. And I see they make mention of that Creative Commons comes into play, because Google, when you search within Google Docs, it limits your image searches and things to Creative Commons licensed resources. So you're kind of covered there by doing it within the Google Docs umbrella, basically.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that. So I was really excited when I saw that. And I think you must have seen that when I highlighted that in Digo, because that was just so cool.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Martin, your turn. Copy matters, writing for the web?
Copy matters, absolutely. This is a series of blog posts on a blog called Church Marketing Sucks. We've referenced this in the past. Yeah, they have an alternate called Church Marketing Stinks, if you prefer that. But sometimes it does. And what they write about are tips and tricks to help us better leverage mostly the web. And this is one of those articles, Copy Matters. This is actually the seventh part. This is part 7 in a whole series called Copy Matters. And just some good little tips here when you're writing for the web, that it's a little bit different than writing for other formats like a newsletter or letters or whatever. The top 4 things they have are: write short, use subheads, use bulleted lists and bold keywords. And then they have a little segment down at the bottom that expounds on that a little bit more. One of them is called unlimited space. Even though you have unlimited space, you can use it, but you have to be careful in how you use it. Find the balance between their first suggestion of writing short. People have limited patience and will click away quickly, so keep it short. So they're suggesting shorter articles, but make sure that they're very findable and the headlines tell you exactly what's in them, and probably it's good to have a summary, a solid summary and intros at the beginning to let people click deeper if they want to learn a little bit more. So just a simple little article, make sense kind of stuff, but it puts it in a format here that you can quickly go through and say, yeah, that those things make sense. And the whole series is good, so I'd suggest that you go to the link and take a look at the other articles in the series.
Awesome. I think I'll tag that one for my web design class that I teach online for MLC, because, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges is the content side of things. You can have great design, but if you don't have great content, who's going to bother to read it?
So, yeah, there was a really good related post called Writing Better Emails with very good tips as well. So it's a good series.
Awesome. All right, Jason, last up, you had tagged Ted Ed.
Yeah, this was something I just found yesterday, too. Ted Ed, we're familiar with TED Talks, you know, the technology, education, and design, and those are 20-minute kind of lectures by these really engaging speakers. What they've done with TED Ed is they've taken some of those TED Talks, and they're in the process of identifying some of these really engaging lecturers and turning them into almost a they add an animation element to it. So the animations that go along with it are either just going along with a voiceover, or they intermix kind of parts of a demonstration. So, for example, I watched one yesterday that had it was talking about neurons and how they work, and the guy ripped a leg off of a cockroach, and well, he didn't rip it off. He amputated it very carefully. Yes. And he said, don't worry, it'll grow back. So, but he pinned it to this device, and then he hooked his iPod up to it, and it started twitching with the beat. I mean, it was just amazing.
Oh,
it was so cool. What this guy did and demonstrated. And, you know, it was like a 5-minute video, but I learned so much. And, you know, I just thought it was such a neat resource and something that I know, especially our teachers out there would really appreciate. You know, you could use this as a beginning of a classroom discussion. You know, if you don't have the cockroaches in your classroom to dissect and hook up to the machine.
Every classroom in the South has cockroaches they could choose
from.
Yeah,
that's true. But then the problem is you got to catch them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just really a neat thing to see. And, you know, they've only got like 15 or so videos now, but I know it's something that they're working on developing and growing. And, I mean, you know, it's just really neat science, mathy kinds of things that, you know, they're really engaging, really entertaining, and really kind of make a whole lot of sense. So it's really cool.
Awesome. Love your enthusiasm, Jason. That's why we like
thanks.
To have you on. All right. Then we just want to make mention that we heard from Nathan Block, who's down at New Hope in Melbourne, Florida. And he wrote to tell us that they had been working toward promotional type videos and wondering how they could best promote their school and church using video. And as they looked into it, professional production teams coming in and shooting a video for you could cost between $1,500 and $4,000. So the cost was really prohibitive to jump into this game. Instead, they purchased Roxio's HD Video Lab at a cost of $60, and they did their own in-house video production. And we want to include a link in our show notes to their video so you can check it out. I think it's very well done. They're promoting an open house at their school and things like that, and just different activities that are going on in the spring and summer at their school. And I think it's an excellent example of what you can do by investing a little bit of time in video production.
Yep.
So.
And there are all kinds of tools right now out there that could be helpful in this regard. One that comes to mind is Animoto, and all of them are now incorporating stills, audio clips, music, video clips, and making it into a more professional-looking production. And if you tweak, I think if you tweak the settings and play with it enough, you're going to get something that really looks nice.
I just encourage you to give it a try. Try something and then go from there, because you got to start somewhere, and it's not as intimidating to jump into as you might think. So absolutely. Great. And then just a little bit of laying out from Nathan as well. He included a link to the scale of the universe. And this is a really cool thing. It reminded me of Prezi. When you start the function, you see a little bit of relationship between like a bird and a beach ball and a human based on size, but then you can zoom in and out, and it kind of can get microscopically smaller, or it can get microscopic, can really expound on how large that is in relation to a lot larger things like Central Park or Angel Falls or whatever it might be, different buildings, all kinds of things. And so a great resource to share in the classroom to give people idea of the size of things in our universe. So thanks for that cool link, Nathan. We'll enjoy sharing that one for sure.
Yep. And if you would like to contribute to the show, which we wish you would, wellstech.wells.net is our website, wellstech@wells.net, the email. We're on Facebook, Google+. You can use the hashtag WellsTech on Twitter to send us a link. Anything that you'd like to share, comment on, you'd like us to talk about, please do. We love feedback.
We don't want to forget mentioning Pinterest, Martin.
And Pinterest, yes.
imagine that.
Yep. We love Pinterest, too. Speaking of all of those ways to communicate with us, we need your help. Next week, we have our continuing series called Seven Best. We put together a list of the seven best of something. And our seven best for next week is the seven best email productivity tools and tips. So if you have a tip or tool that helps you manage your email a little bit better, we would love to hear about it and consider it for our top seven list. So please use those ways of getting in touch with us to share one of your tools or tips. It's going to make our email lives much, much better. We will be talking about that on the show next week, so tune in on that.
All right.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us once again. Appreciate your insights, and look forward to having you on again.
Thanks a lot. It was my pleasure.
And Sally is always nicely done. Sally is the person behind this podcast, and everything you see on the web is her doing. What a great resource that is. Thank you for all your work, Sally.
Well, thank you. That's very kind words.
Let's close the show with the music of Mike Wessendorf, Amazing Grace, from his album Climb the Mountain. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.
That saved